Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Alan G. Lamb presiding. All who have business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Lance. To my right is Judge Greenberg. To my left, Judge Hagel. We're here at the appointed time, date, and location for hearing in the case of Mary Vilfrank versus Robert McDonald, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 15-0904. Will counsel for each of the parties please identify yourself? Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. For the Secretary, Mark D. Gore, and the Council's Table's Deputy Chief Counsel, Richard Hughes.
Thank you. Counsel, ready to proceed?
Sir, I may reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, please.
10 minutes, make it so. I would ask counsel to speak up, if you would, please, when you're arguing. I seem to have some hearing difficulties in here. Thank you. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The veteran in this case has two disabling conditions. She has pain in each her left and right temporomandibular joints. Under 4.25B, each disabling condition must be rated separately unless the rating schedule provides otherwise. The veteran's bilateral TMJ dysfunction is rated under diagnostic code 9905. That diagnostic code contains no exception to the general rule laid out in 4.25B. Under 4.59, actually painful joints are entitled to at least the minimum compensable rating. We're asking this court today to hold that 4.25B and 4.59 allow for a veteran to receive a 10% rating for each painful temporomandibular joint under diagnostic code 9905. We then request that the court remand the case to the board for the board to apply the correct interpretation of the law.
Counsel, do you agree with the Secretary's assertion that the TMJs are a paired set of joints and therefore there's only one?
No, Your Honor. We do not agree with that. There are two joints at issue here. There's both a left and a right temporomandibular joint. Each of these joints is painful. Thus, under 4.59, the veteran should receive the minimum compensable rating for each painful joint. 4.59 is a regulation that explains how to arrive at a proper evaluation under the diagnostic codes. The fifth sentence of 4.59 ensures that a veteran experiencing an actually painful joint is entitled to at least the minimum compensable rating for that joint under the appropriate diagnostic code to the joint involved. So 4.59 works in tandem with diagnostic code 9905 in this case to authorize a minimum compensable rating per joint for pain. Your Honors, the record shows that Ms. Vilfrank has two actually painful temporomandibular joints. On page 799 of the record in the May 2011 VA examination, the dentist who examined Ms. Vilfrank noted that there was tenderness to the area lateral to both TMJs. Additionally, Ms. Vilfrank stated that the pain began around the joint. This is on 798, Your Honors. The pain begins around the joint, and it intensifies and radiates to the temples, to the angle of the mandible, and to the back of the neck. Furthermore, in the January 2011 VA examination, The examiner said that pain to palpation described by the patient and observed clinically are most likely caused by TMJ problems. Thus, the record reflects that Ms. Villafranc has two actually painful joints.
Counselor, can you identify any symptoms that would not overlap if two separate ratings were provided, other than pain?
Other than pain, yes, Your Honor. The veteran also has difficulty chewing. This is caused by her pain, and so logically, if she had pain on one side, it would make sense that it would be more difficult to chew on that side. That would be the other symptom that it would not be an overlapping symptom besides pain. But, Your Honor, pain is our primary concern here because of the mandate in 4.59 that an actually painful joint receive the minimum compensable rating. So even if there were no other symptoms aside from pain that didn't overlap, our argument would be the same. Your Honors, there are other diagnostic codes that specify when a veteran can be rated differently for a bilateral condition. For example, 9906, the very next code after the code at issue here, 9905, specifies which rating should be given for a unilateral disability and which rating should be given for a bilateral. So this shows that VA knew how to write this exception into the diagnostic codes. 9906 is one of the exceptions laid out in 4.25B when separate disabilities are not to be rated separately. 9905 does not have any such similar language. Your Honor, the Secretary's entire argument rests on the fact that they believe this is pyramiding, that giving the veteran two ratings would rate the same limitation of motion twice. But we're not asking this court to rate her twice for the same limited movement of the jaw. We're asking you to rate her once at the minimum compensable level for each actually painful joint.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? It's difficult for me to hear well in the, not because of you, because of the acoustics here.
Of course, Your Honor. The Secretary's argument is that this would be pyramiding, that we would be assigning two ratings for the same manifestation, namely limitation of motion of the mouth, and the veteran only has one mouth, thus can only get one rating. But this is wrong because we're not asking the court to rate her twice for the same limited movement of the jaw. We're asking the court to rate her once for each actually painful joint as allowed by 4.59. The veteran is diagnosed with bilateral TMJ dysfunction. She has two temporomandibular joints. Both of them are painful. The left joint is painful and the right joint is painful. The left painful joint is not the same as the right. Thus, Your Honors, once again, we're asking the court to hold that 4.25B, the general rule, and 4.59 allow for a veteran to receive a 10% rating for each painful temporomandibular joint under 9905. And Your Honors, if there are no further questions.
Well, I think we have some questions. Your argument was very pointed and very direct, but the brief doesn't argue that. The brief only argues that the board, there weren't sufficient reasons or bases for the board making their decision. And I haven't heard you address that yet.
Your Honor, this error that I'm describing today is a reasons or bases error. We're not asking the court to create new law. We're just asking the court to interpret the existing law and remand the case with instructions for the board to apply that law as it should have done in the first instance. The board did not even cite 4.59 in its decision at all. The law is clear on this point, and the board just simply didn't discuss it and didn't apply it. That was the reasons or bases error here.
Well, what you just argued wasn't raised until your reply brief. Isn't that true?
Yes, Your Honor. 4.59 was not cited until our reply brief. In our opening, we said that 4.25B requires all disabling conditions to be rated separately. The veteran has two actually painful joints. The board erred in failing to consider the separate ratings for each joint. Then the secretary argued in their brief that two ratings would be pyramiding, since 9905 is based on limitation of motion of the mouth, and the veteran only has one mouth. So our response to that is, no, it's not pyramiding, because 4.59 provides an avenue to compensate Ms. Villafranc in the way that we are arguing she should be compensated, which is why 4.59 was brought up in our reply. It's a response to the secretary's point that this would be pyramiding.
I believe you alluded earlier to 38 CFR section 471A, which does provide for multiple ratings of multiple joints. Isn't it telling that the secretary did not include DC 9905 in that section when the secretary's position is that it's one disability, not two?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you repeat that question?
You bet. 38 CFR 471A pertains to other joints where there's multiple joints involved and multiple ratings anticipated and authorized by the secretary. However, in that section, the secretary did not include DC 9905, which is basically what we're talking about. And I'm suggesting that maybe they were kept separate for a reason, and that reason may be contained in the medical, the anatomy, or possibly the secretary will enlighten us on this. But it's separate and distinct for some reason. And I'm asking if that reason is cogent or something that you've looked at.
No, Your Honor. TMJ is a dental condition, so it does make sense that the secretary included that in within the conditions that are dental. And we're not asking this court to review the rating schedule, and we're not challenging the secretary's decision to place this code within a particular context in the rating schedule. But it's not relevant because 4.59 applies either way. 4.59 doesn't just apply to the diagnostic codes in 4.71A.
So you how do you reconcile the Esteban section of 4.14 rule against pyramiding with where you're at?
We reconcile that, Your Honor, because under using the tool of 4.59, this would not be pyramiding. We're not asking for the veteran to be compensated for the same manifestation. These are two separate disabling conditions that produce two separate manifestations. It's not an overlap where we're asking for her to get two ratings for the same exact manifestation of these conditions.
You didn't write this brief, am I correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. It was Mr. Overby that wrote the brief, as I recall, right?
Yes.
And Mr. Overby also, as I recall, wrote the brief, the original brief, in Smith. Now, how do you reconcile, that's the tinnitus case, and how do you reconcile the Federal Circuit's finding in Smith about tinnitus in this case?
Your Honor, this is not the same as the case in Smith. In Smith, the circuit deferred to the Secretary's interpretation, and a large part of the reason they did that is because the Secretary provided medical support for their suggestion that tinnitus was really one disability that should be given one rating. That medical evidence was that tinnitus arises from the brain rather than from the ears. It's a central nervous system condition. So that was the basis for the Secretary's interpretation in Smith, and the Federal Circuit found that deference was warranted in that case. Here,
as I recall, the Federal Circuit, R. Smith, I think, dealt more with the facts with regard to where tinnitus emanated from and so forth, but the Federal Circuit focused on the court's requirement to give deference to the Secretary's interpretation. And so in this case, the Secretary interprets this to be, the two jaws, two joints in the jaw, assuming they are joints, operate as one. So there really couldn't be, two disabilities. So it was the Federal Circuit's view was based upon deference, not upon the facts of whether there was a single disability or not. Do you see what I'm saying? So I'm not sure that the fact that there's no medical evidence in this case would apply to our requirement to give deference to the Secretary. So can you tell me why we should not give deference to the Secretary's interpretation?
Yes, Your Honor. We should not defer to the Secretary's interpretation because the plain language of 4.25B says that all disabling conditions must be rated separately unless otherwise provided in the rating schedule. There's no exception provided in 9905. Thus, each painful joint should be rated separately. And 4.59 is what provides the avenue to do that without pyramiding.
What is the primary symptoms of TMJ? What's the disability?
Your Honor, it's a collection of symptoms. It depends on the person. In this case, pain seems to be one of the major symptoms that this veteran is dealing with. Another symptom, another manifestation, as is seen in 9905, is the limitation of opening the mouth. Some veterans have clicking. Some veterans have painful chewing. There's a collection of symptoms.
But the only measurement for this, the only determination on the level of disability for TMJ is provided by the Secretary the measurements, either opening and closing or movement from side to side. Doesn't that somehow imply that this is what that action encompasses all of the potential symptoms of TMJ?
No, Your Honor. Because 9905 works in tandem with 4.59. 4.59 sets forth the Secretary's intention to compensate each actually painful joint, even if the diagnostic code doesn't specifically say that. We use 4.59 in that way with other diagnostic codes, such as limitation of motion of the knee, with other musculoskeletal conditions. The veteran doesn't have to show actual limitation of motion anyway that corresponds to the requirements of the appropriate DC in order to get the minimum compensable rating.
What if there was medical evidence in the record that TMJ and the symptoms from TMJ really all were that, for example, the two joints were really part of the mouth and they all operated together? What would be the result of that? As I, you mentioned before that one of the differences between Smith and this was the existence of medical evidence in Smith, while there is none here. So let's say there was that medical evidence. What would be the outcome here?
The outcome would be the same, because our argument is not based on limitation of motion at all. So under 4.59, the veteran would still receive the minimum compensable rating for each actually painful joint, even if it were medically determined that, as the Secretary claims in his brief, impairment of the left TMJ was equal to impairment of the right TMJ and they were one and the same disability. Even so, we would still should still prevail because of 4.59.
Because of pain?
Yes, Your Honor, because of pain in each joint. Your Honors, if there is no further questions, I would just ask that the court hold that 4.25B and 4.59 allow for a veteran to receive a 10% rating for each painful temporomandibular joint under Diagnostic Code 9905. And we'd ask the court to remand the case to the board for the board to apply this correct interpretation of the law.
Just wait 1 second, make sure I don't have another question. Do you believe that 9905 is plain on its face?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But and what would that, if that's the case, then how is it plain on its face given the interpretation in Smith that there was ambiguity in the regulation with regard to tinnitus, even though, you know, tinnitus appeared to be, I mean, our court found tinnitus was plain on its face, and there were two ears. And here you're claiming there, you know, two joints, and therefore we should look at the pain in each of those joints. I'm sorry, was that question too confusing? I mean, I'm not sure I asked it more directly enough. Would you like me to try again?
I think, Your Honor, I understand where you're going. So 9905 is clear in that it compensates the veteran for limited motion. That is clear and plain on its face. And if that were the only thing that we were looking at here, we probably wouldn't have much of an argument. But our argument is very much based on the interplay between this diagnostic code, 4.25B, and 4.59, and looking at the plain language of those three regulations and how they work together. VA intended for veterans with actually painful joints to receive the minimum compensable rating for each joint.
So are you saying that in the Smith case that was referred to by my colleague, it's one brain that causes tinnitus, whereas here it's two joints that are at work and should be given the appropriate rating?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You want more time on the clock?
No.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Gore, for the Secretary.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Secretary's Diagnostic Code 9905 is clear and unambiguous on its face, and it allows for only one rating for temporomandibular joint, or TMJ, dysfunction. The TMJs are unique in the body as they are compared to other musculoskeletal joints like the knees, ankles, hips, or shoulders. All of those other joints operate independently of one another. It's plain that one can move one's left knee without moving one's right knee. One can experience disability in one's left knee without that same disability affecting one's right knee.
That's the theme of your brief, and it's a very good brief. However, do we have any medical evidence before us to support that?
There's no medical evidence per se, Your Honor. However, it's clear in looking at on the face of 9905 that the Secretary has focused on a body part of which there is only one. The theme of appellant's approach here is to focus on the joints independently, the left and the right. However, the Secretary, and it's the Secretary's the Secretary has the discretion to define and evaluate the disability resulting from TMJ dysfunction. The Secretary has chosen to focus on the jaw itself rather than the two joints independently and has focused on the degree to which the mouth opens and where that disability is defined. In terms of only a unitary body part, there can be only one rating with respect to that.
If I may, wasn't there a time when the Secretary took the position that there was only one rating available for the head or the brain, TBI and PTSD, both affecting the brain, but one body part, one rating? Wasn't that the position some time ago?
I'm not entirely certain in the context of which the Secretary...
Well, let's just... I believe there was, whether it was Defense Department or the VA, but... Assuming that for the moment, as an analogous situation, you have one body part, the brain, you could have traumatic brain injury, you could have a hole in the head, you could have PTSD, you could have any number of conditions. Why is your position rational here?
Symptoms, Your Honor. When we refer to various maladies of the brain, such as you mentioned, TBIs, PTSD or various other psychiatric diagnoses, the point there is they all have different manifestations, different symptomatology. And so in those cases, one can have multiple ratings without running afoul of the...
Well, couldn't you chew on one side and have no pain on the other side or have pain on both sides or have different sort of pain or different sort of restrictions on... the motion of the mouth?
Theoretically, one could surmise a situation such as that. However, there's no evidence of that here. There's no allegation.
Why shouldn't this go back and have the board take another or the regional office take another look at the absence of medical evidence? By the way, I don't think it's argued, but what about the duty to assist? Is that fully met here by the Secretary? And where's the effort to help the veteran create the differentiation between the two, if that's the argument? Once the argument is made that we have two separate body parts that ought to be rated separately, do you think the Secretary has any obligation to pursue that once the argument is raised?
Respectfully, Your Honor, that's not the argument appellant's made here. There's been no allegation and there's no evidence anywhere in the record suggesting that there's any differentiation as to the symptoms on each side. Indeed, appellant's presentation here today is that the symptoms on each side are identical, and they simply want them to be rated independently. And that entire approach is based on 459 and pointing out that pain on the left is separate from pain in the right.
Well, would the outcome be different if you had a doctor that said, is a different sort of pain on one side and a different sort of pain on the other, or the pain is a result of different manifestations of activity by one joint versus the other?
No, the outcome wouldn't be any different, Your Honor. Again, when we're speaking about pain as the source of the disability, of the limitation of motion here, we're necessarily invoking Section 4.59, which is exactly the approach appellant takes here. However, it's important to note, and what appellant ignores here, is that this Court has been very clear recently in its decisions in Petiti and again more recently in Sowers, that Section 4.59 is not an independent source of disability compensation. Section 4.99 works in conjunction with and subject to the underlying diagnostic code, and it's that diagnostic code that defines the disability. So, and that really, that leads directly to the outcome here, which is mandated by Section 414 and Esteban, where pain in the left results in limitation of the ability to open the mouth, and pain on the right results in limitation of the ability to open the mouth. The two disabilities are exactly the same. And it's clear that appellant would prefer that the Secretary would have looked at the two joints separately, but the Secretary didn't do that, and it's the Secretary who has the authority, the sole authority, to define the disability here. And where the Secretary has focused on a unitary body part, there can be only one rating. And again, if there were evidence in the record that the symptoms on the left and the right were completely different and resulted in completely different manifestations, then we wouldn't have an Esteban problem here or a 414 problem here. We would then in that case have separate disabilities. But of course, there's no evidence or allegation here of such a situation. Rather, all we have is an allegation of pain on the left and pain on the right. And as this court made clear in Petiti and Sowers, in looking to whether those are separate disabilities, we're necessarily led back to the diagnostic code, which is 9905 here, which defines TMJ disability in terms of the interincisal range of motion.
Again, I'll kind of echo Judge Greenberg's question, and I think as the appellant correctly stated, there's a difference between Smith, where we would give you the Secretary deference, and this case. In Smith, there was evidence of exactly what the Secretary was arguing. Here, there is no evidence. You gave a very eloquent explanation, but it's not in the record. How do you reconcile that?
Very simply, Your Honor, the issue in Smith, the predicate finding to the analysis in Smith was that the Secretary's regulation was ambiguous, in that it was an aural condition, tinnitus, and there are two ears, and there's no indication as to whether or not it refers to tinnitus that may be perceived in the left or the right end or both.
And so what did the court look at in order to determine whether or not the Secretary's whether or not the court had to give the Secretary deference in their interpretation? What the court looked at various things. What did they look at?
The court looked at the medical evidence offered by the Secretary in support.
Sorry. Could you speak a little slower?
Yes, certainly. The court looked at the medical evidence in the record as to in terms of whether or not it should defer to the Secretary's interpretation.
Where is the Secretary's interpretation shown? There has to be a sustained interpretation by the Secretary in order for you to argue that in your litigation documents, as I understand the law. So, for example, in Gray, when we're talking about the Secretary's interpretation of whether or not Da Nang Harbor qualified as one that was not an inland water, the Secretary couldn't point to anything that would support the Secretary's determination that it was in fact inland waterway. So here I'm grappling with even assuming that your explanation is one that we would accept, how do we know that the Secretary, this is an interpretation that the Secretary has consistently held? Is there an OGC opinion or some other document that we can look at, an internal document perhaps?
I'm not aware of a GC opinion speaking to the issue, but your discussion with respect to Gray and really speaks to the distinction I was drawing with respect to Smith, in that the threshold finding in Smith was that the regulation was ambiguous. It's only when there's a finding of ambiguity that one need resort to medical evidence or other types of evidence to ascertain the Secretary's interpretation of his ambiguous regulation. We have no such ambiguity here. There's no need to get to any question of deference.
Well, the ambiguity is the same as it was in Smith, isn't it? In Smith, the court found ambiguity, the Federal Circuit found ambiguity. I'm sorry, I'm trying to think if it was our court or the Federal Circuit found ambiguity. The Federal Circuit said there was ambiguity because the interpretation of the Secretary, the allegation by the appellant did not, the regulation itself did not answer the question that the appellant was posing. And so that, therefore, and that question was whether or not tinnitus that appeared in both ears were separate disabilities. And therefore, since the regulation did not address that, then inherently it was ambiguous. And you're saying now that there's, and it seems to me that this is a similar situation, the appellant is arguing that there is, that the jaws are independent and pain in those jaws would result in separate disabilities, and therefore your position is that that's, the regulation is clear, we don't have to worry about that, but it seems to me that the Federal Circuit didn't reason that way. Well, I mean, am I wrong in that interpretation?
You're not incorrect in so with respect to the way the Federal Circuit reasoned, but the situations here are, between here and in Smith are entirely different. Of course, when we're speaking about Smith, we're talking about conditions of the ears, and the allegation there was that tinnitus is experienced in the left and is experienced in the right. And all the Secretary says in his tinnitus regulation is simply providing a rating for the existence of the condition. And, of course, where there are two ears and a veteran, at least in his or her mind, experiences it individually in each ear, that's a question that the Secretary's regulation very much leaves open, whether or not it's considered a condition of the ear or, as he said during the litigation, a condition of the central nervous system. The regulation says nothing on that point. The situation is entirely different here. We're speaking of the interincisal range of the mouth, how far the mouth can open. Of course, there's only one jaw, and the interincisal range is measured at the center of the mouth where the incisors are. It makes no anatomical sense to look at the left and the right where the measurement's being taken in the middle. Here, the Secretary's regulation plainly does answer the question that appellant raises as to whether or not there's individual disability of the left and right, where the Secretary defines the disability clearly in terms of how far the unitary body part, the mouth, opens. There's no question as to whether there's separate disabilities of the left and right. And again, I would point out that the only disabilities that are alleged by appellant with respect to the left and right are simply pain, which again, that pain under 459. 459 just simply allows for a bridge to permit otherwise non-compensable symptoms like pain to be treated as minimally compensable. Again, you refer back to 9905, and no matter which way you approach it, you still result in pain on the right, resulting in a limitation on the ability to open the mouth, and pain in the left, resulting in an inability to open the mouth. They are still the exact same disability, and there is complete overlap between the two disabilities alleged in that way. And I'll just emphasize in terms of your questions with respect to Gray and Smith, that the situations are entirely different in that the Secretary's diagnostic code unquestionably refers to only one symptom of one body part as the manifestation of TMJ dysfunction. So the Secretary's regulation is clear and unambiguous here, and the court need not reach the subsidiary issue of deference to the Secretary's position.
Well, so your position, I take it then, is okay. The only issue here is whether or not the measurement is whatever it is, and that relates to the level of disability. That's the only thing that, and so the jaws, pain in the jaws, make no difference.
Oh, I mean,
it's all. Well, in this case, they, the board, or the RO, has given the appellant a separate rating for headaches as a result of this, as a result of the TMJ. Why shouldn't they consider the pain in the jaw the same way they do pain in the head?
Well, headaches are a separate disability, Your Honor. And the RO certainly has considered pain in the jaw here. It's indeed, it's exactly that pain
that led to the rating here. It was pain that limited Ms. Villafranca's ability to open her mouth, limited to only 40 to 50 millimeters, and the RO gave the benefit of the doubt and rated her based on the lowest portion there, the 40. It's exactly the pain that the RO considered, and headaches are, of course, a separate disability, and the RO recognized that. And that really speaks to the issue here, in that if there are other manifestations of the TMJ that result in other symptoms and other disabling manifestations that are not contemplated by 9905, then those, of course, are
so you're saying the pain is part and parcel of TMJ, even though some people have pain, some people don't have pain, some people have pain on one side, not the other side. So but pain in the jaws would be part and parcel of TMJ. Sounds like that's the Secretary's position.
Well, with respect to the facts,
because it's only one disability.
Well, with respect to the facts of this case, yes, that would be the Secretary's position here. Of course, TMJ can manifest in any number of ways, but the point here is that the pain existing on the left and the right both result in the exact same disability, and there's been no allegation with respect to the TMJ disability and the pain of any sort of disability as between the left and the right that isn't completely overlapping with one another. So it's clearly a Section 4.14 and Esteban issue here, in that we have no evidence or no allegation of any separate disabilities at all. And the Secretary's regulation is clear and unambiguous on its face as allowing for only one disability rating, where we're referring to only one body part.
Of course, that's your opinion without any medical evidence to support it.
Well, with respect, Your Honor, of course, I don't think that the Secretary would need to submit medical evidence that there is only one jaw in the human body and only one ability to open the mouth. A relevant anatomical analogy would be with looking at an individual knee. Of course, there are separate surfaces of articulation on the knee, the left, the lateral, and the medial condyle. Either one of them separately could result in limitation of flexion of the knee. They both could act in concert to result in limitation of flexion of the knee. Regardless of which situation obtains, there's still only one rating for limitation of flexion of the knee, because there's only, with respect to an individual knee, it's only one knee. And that's a perfect example here with respect to the mouth, where there's only one jaw, there's only one interincisal range that can ever be measured, regardless of whether there are multiple causes for that reduced interincisal range. It's still only one body part. And it's difficult for me to imagine what sort of medical evidence the Secretary could proffer in that regard without simply stating the obvious, that there is only the one mouth and that there can only be one measured in interincisal range.
I have a separate question, but I don't want to. I want to see if any of my colleagues want to pursue this.
Certainly,
any partner. Okay, my question is looking at four. I forgot to ask this to the appellant. So if you'd please listen to the question and be prepared to answer it. 4.59. It says that the intent. Do you have it? Okay. This is about middle way down the regulation in my book. It says that the intent of the schedule is to recognize painful motion with the joint or the paraarticular pathology as productive of a disability. It is the intention to recognize actually painful, unstable, or malaligned joints due to healed injury as entitled to at least minimum compensable rating for the joint. Now, is there any significance to the fact that 4.59 refers only to injury and not disease?
No, Your Honor. Again, the 4.59, with respect to the facts here, simply refers again to pain and allows otherwise non-compensable pain to be.
So if TMJ is in fact a result of a disability, a medical condition as opposed to an injury, wouldn't make any difference.
No, it wouldn't, Your Honor. Again, for compensation purposes, we're looking at the actual disability itself. And again, 4.59 is not itself a standalone independent source of disability compensation, but rather is informative with respect to the way symptoms are evaluated with respect to the underlying diagnostic code. So the Secretary certainly recognizes pain as productive of disability with 459, but that disability, again, is defined by the diagnostic code, and that diagnostic code here is 9905, of course, where the pain that would be experienced either the left or the right just simply refers back again to the jaw. So it would not make a difference whether it was due to injury or due to a disease entity.
Okay.
If there are no further questions from the bench at this point. Yes.
Are there any circumstances under which VA would assign more than one rating under 9905?
There certainly could be. Based on just fact here, no. How one could certainly devise some sort of situation where perhaps the job became bifurcated in some way so that there were actually different manifestations that did not completely overlap. Apart from something like I mentioned, like a bifurcation of the jaw, I can't think of any. But certainly if such an abnormal situation were to arise, that would be fertile ground for the Secretary to consider a separate rating under Section 3321 for an exceptional and unusual circumstance. But insofar as the allegation is simply a limitation of the articulation of the TMJs where the jaw remained whole and intact, I can't think of a situation where separate ratings would obtain. There would need to be some showing, as the court stated in Esteban, that there were separate and completely non-overlapping symptoms. And again, where you have just simply TMJs resulting in limitation of motion, I don't see a situation where you could find such non-overlapping symptoms.
I may have one other question if you just...
Certainly, Your Honor.
If you wouldn't give me one second.
Certainly.
Judge Hagel, you have 7 minutes and 29 seconds.
I'm sorry, I didn't agree.
You have 7 minutes and 29 seconds.
I understand. I'm watching closely. And I intend to take all of my time.
Fine.
I'm just looking at the pyramiding regulation, which 4.14, which you, I think the Secretary is primarily relying on. Am I correct?
Yes, 414, and in conjunction with the definition of the disability in 9905, yes.
You see, here's the problem I'm having, or the thing I'm trying to reconcile here with 4.14. It starts off by... You know, the predicate of 4.14, the first sentence says, evaluation of the same disability, TMJ in this case, under various diagnoses is to be avoided. So the cases that I recall with regard to pyramiding seem to deal with trying to rate a single disability under two separate disability codes, if you were. Here, as I understand the appellant's argument, they say that the pain in the jaw is a separate symptom, an additional symptom that needs to be rated as opposed to a different disability. Am I correct in what I've said and about A, the status of the law with regard to pyramiding and separate disabilities, and the Secretary's position and the appellant's position?
I think I understand what you're getting at, Your Honor. But additionally, I would disagree with the premise of your question, where you noted that the separate disabilities here are the TMJs. TMJ is not the disability here. TMJ is simply the name of the joint on the left and the right, the temporomandibular joint. Mm-hmm. The disability is what the Secretary has defined it to be here, which is the limitation of the interincisal range. And that's, I think, the key distinction here, and that it's appellant's approach and appellant's contention here that the disabilities should be the individual joints. But the Secretary hasn't taken that route. The Secretary has looked at the functional disability resulting from the pain in those joints, which is limitation of the ability to open the mouth. So I think that really is the key distinction.
Is the Secretary saying that the inability to open the mouth is a result of the pain?
It's a result of the limitation of motion of the TMJ joints, whether one or both. The functional disability is disability in terms of one can't open one's mouth as far, and that's borne out in the Secretary's regulatory guidance in the Federal Register in January 1994. The Secretary was simply trying to capture really the disability that was the Secretary was trying to get at. There was difficulty in chewing and speaking, both of which are an integral part of which is, of course, opening the mouth, and the Secretary simply sought to quantify that. But the key distinction there is that the Secretary's focus is not on the individual joints like it is with the knees, elbows, wrists, ankles, that sort of thing, where they can function independently. The key is with the jaw. They cannot function independently because they are connected with the rigid mandible, which the functional manifestation is with respect to the mouth, a unitary body part. So there can only be the one disability where you look at pain in the left and the right. And I'm just speaking to your understanding of 414 and pyramiding. Yes, I believe your understanding is exactly correct. Of course, that legal proposition isn't limited to simply applying different codes, as Esteban makes clear. The point is, whenever you're looking for separate ratings, you have to find non-overlapping disabilities and symptomatology, and we simply don't have that here with respect to limitation of the TMJs. They both result in limitation of the ability to open the mouth. They are completely overlapping. That construction is clear on the face of the Secretary's regulation.
So no matter what problem there is with the jaw, no matter what the problem is, then as a result, and resulting in the fact you can't open your mouth X amount, the measurement's all that counts.
Where the disability is to be rated based on the degree of opening the mouth, yes, that would be correct. Of course, there can be other disabilities of the jaw, as the Secretary's schedule makes clear. There are quite a number of rating codes related to the jaw. Some of those do allow for bilateral and unilateral ratings. The Secretary has drawn that distinction where there are two different body parts involved, such as appellant referred to 9906, speaking of the ramus, to other parts of the jaw. Where there are two of them, of course, the Secretary makes the distinction required by 425B, but in 9905, where it is just a single body part, no distinction is necessary, and it's clear and unambiguous on its face that there can only be one disability so defined as limitation of the interincisal range. So unless there are further questions from the Court, it would be the Secretary's contention that the Board's decision at issue here should be affirmed in all respects.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Barr.
Your Honors, I'll start by answering Judge Hagel's question about the healed injury portion of 4.59. So in this case, it's unclear what caused TMJ. She had TMJ in service. It's not clear what the exact etiology of that condition is, But in Petiti, the court said a veteran experiencing an actually painful joint is entitled to at least the minimum compensable rating for that joint. And in that case, the secretary also conceded that this part of 4.59, the healed injury part, applies to painful motion caused by either a healed injury or a disease. So it's not just for healed injury. So it's okay that we're not sure what caused her TMJ dysfunction in the first place. Your Honors, the Secretary points out that 4.59 is a bridge. 4.59 does not allow for an independent avenue to compensate a veteran. We agree with that. We agree that 4.59 is a bridge. We agree that in Petiti, this court held that 4.59 works with the diagnostic code under which the veteran is rated. And we're not asking for anything different here. We're asking for the court to view 4.59 in conjunction with 9905, just as the court did in Petiti. The secretary said that pain is what led to this rating in the first place, that pain caused the limitation of motion that leads to the veteran's current rating. There's no evidence of that in the record, that pain is what caused her limitation of motion. Most critically, though, limitation of motion is not the same as pain. That's our fundamental disagreement with the secretary's position. The limitation of motion and the pain is not all one and the same, all part of the same jaw disability. Because in the secretary's view, no matter what the problems are with the jaw, the only thing that matters is the limitation of motion, because that's what 9905 contemplates. But that reading completely ignores 4.59. It reads 4.59 out of the regulatory scheme. And that's not the way that VA intended veterans to be compensated. The plain language of 4.59 makes that clear, Your Honors. And I'd also just point out that the secretary spoke about pain on left, pain on the right. There's no differentiation. It's the same pain. But even if they both cause pain, it's not the same pain, because it's pain arising from two separate joints, which we know that VA intends to compensate separately with the minimum compensable rating.
How do we know it's two separate joints?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How do we know it's two separate joints? How do we know that medicine considers it two separate joints in this instance? I think the secretary's position is it's a jaw and it all operates together, which may be interpreted as being looked at it as a single joint. That may be a stretch, but that's kind of a global view of what I see the secretary arguing.
Your Honor, we know it's two separate joints because on page 799 of the record, the VA examiner noted that there was tenderness to the area lateral to both TMJs, TMJ standing for temporomandibular joints. The examiner referred to them in the plural. That's how we know that there are two.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Counsel, the position that you advocate, doesn't that take us dangerously close to getting into the rating schedule that we're prohibited by statute from getting into?
No, Your Honor. We're not asking the court to review the rating schedule in any way, simply to interpret the interplay between the diagnostic code here, 9905, 4.25B, and 4.59.
Let's say that we adopted at least your inferred position that we don't need any medical evidence to resolve this case. Am I, first of all, correct about that? In other words, we can resolve this case without getting any more medical evidence in the record.
Yes, in the sense that we're only asking for the minimum compensable ratings based on pain, and because the evidence is clear on that point, that's okay. Correct.
If that's the case, the Secretary would counter, I imagine, that, well, wait a minute, our position is you don't need medical evidence and you should defer, you, the court, should defer to the Secretary's considered view, which appears in the litigation papers in this case. Is there a problem with that? Do you see a problem with that argument? And if so, what?
Yes, Your Honor. If the court finds that the plain language does not control here, or that it's the regulations are ambiguous, then deference should still not be afforded to the Secretary's argument, because the Secretary's interpretation isn't reasonable. There's no reasoned analysis. It's not based on any medical principles, like the Secretary's position was in Smith. And it's also contrary to case law. It's contrary to Petiti, which tells us that we should read 4.59 in conjunction with the diagnostic code at issue. It's contrary to the plain language of 4.59 itself, which says that the VA's intention is to give the minimum compensable rating for actually painful joints. For those reasons, the court should not defer.
Yeah, but the Secretary's made an interpretation of their own regulation. They're supposed to be given a lot of deference. That's what ours says, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they're given that deference because there is some considered evidence of some considered longstanding interpretation that's consistent with their litigation position, as I understand it. Is that correct? I mean, in your view, is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor, but the Secretary's position here is not the considered judgment of the Secretary, because it completely reads out 4.59 from the regulatory scheme.
Okay, I understand. So you're saying 4.59 wasn't considered by the Secretary, and that's what we should look at.
Yes, that their interpretation essentially ignores 4.59.
Okay.
Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we'll ask that this court hold that 4.25B and 4.59 allow for the veteran to receive a 10% rating for each painful temporomandibular joint under Diagnostic Code 9905, and we ask the court to remand this case to the board for the board to apply the correct interpretation of the law.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
As is our custom, we will now greet counsel, remembering that it's the flu and cold season.